extra time is exactly how I find out what's going on in the MLS.
Get lost. Get lost.
Maybe this podcast has influenced me a little bit as well.
Everybody up here, every single day, goes into the office, into the laboratory, to try to cook up some great stuff for you guys.
That's why he's here!
Ow, from New York, New York, you are listening to Extra Time, driven by Continental Tire from the AT&T 5G Virtual Studios. I am Andrew Wiebe with my partners in soccer, Kalen Carr, David Goss, Matt Doyle. What's up, guys? We got through red, white, green light. 22 teams remain. This is my Squid Games comparison that I just cannot get over. It's a little bit, it's a little bit bloody, but yeah, 22 teams are left. We knew FC Cincinnati was out, Austin, Houston, Chicago, Toronto. Adios. Until next year. This year will not be the one for you. You won't be making the playoffs, but hey, still a bunch of people there. How did you guys feel about the weekend? How did you experience it? How are you experiencing this time of year as fortunes fade? And other fortunes seem to rise out of the nowhere, like NYCFC is going down and the Red Bulls going up.
So I guess it helps that I'm a neutral. I don't root for one specific team. I was like, I want the most teams involved as long as this thing goes along. And so this weekend was a big victory for me because I was like, oh, I hope so-and-so gets points. I hope so-and-so gets points and stays in this playoff race. And then it was like, everyone's still in the playoff race. Congratulations.
Yeah, that was the story of the weekend, wasn't it? Like the top seven teams in MLS all dropped points, and like that mostly went to the middle of the pack. Teams that were, you know, either trying to stay above the line or trying to climb above the line. So it like there's like this time of year there's supposed to be more separation. It's going in the other direction. Like it's actually getting tighter.
If you want the Squid Games reference here, Dave is like Ali, like he's holding up.
No spoilers. I haven't watched. I've only watched the first
episode.
It's
exciting, though. I don't think Weeby's.
Yeah, I mean, he's like keeping everybody alive. Whereas, like, you know, maybe Kalen's like Sungwoo, and he's just like pushing people into the darkness. He's like, oh, did you not move? Oh, you moved now.
I don't think Weeby's watched an actual show relevantly in like 6 years, so it's really exciting.
You should be referencing Succession today. Succession, the season debut was last night for the first time in 2 years.
I can be on one zeitgeist. That's it. I can't deal with anything else. I don't have enough time. I don't have enough energy. That's it. I got Squid Games, Doyle, and nothing else.
What would Andrew Wiebe of 10 years ago think of this man? My goodness.
He would not recognize me at all, but he would be happy that I'm still sitting here talking about MLS in some shape or form. Look, big show coming. We're going to talk through every single thing that happened in MLS this weekend. It all matters now because everybody's basically fighting for their lives. And we're going to hit the mailbag as well. We got some mail that said, give us more mail. So we're going to try to prioritize that for those of you who want more. Be sure to check out MLSsoccer.com, the Armchair Analyst, as always. MLS Week 30, run it down. Check it out on the .com or the app. Instant Replay is a banger. Anders Had is going to be a banger. There were a lot of calls to dig through this weekend, including a penalty.
Yeah, was it a penalty? For Cincy?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. I thought so too.
That did Techo's cross the line? Did Techo's cross the line? Because that looked
I didn't see
Techo's.
How did we miss that?
Oh, come on. Instant replay. I'm going to tweet at you guys now.
Producer Rich. Producer Rich. Wow. We might have to go late at
throwing
time.
Rich under the bus?
Yeah,
come on
now. Don't you watch the games?
This is Squid Games. You don't come on. We're all playing it. Like I'm not trying to take the punishment for this one. And Dax McCarty's on the call up this week.
Instant replay for hosts is like Squid Games for sure.
A little bit. Yeah.
You got to be ready.
Bobby Warshaw. Yeah, Bobby Warshaw got the umbrella on the little sugar cracker, and he didn't have the strategy.
I feel like Weeby's spoiling me on like the rest.
No,
of the
they're
show.
All very. It's all very small points. Just go watch the show. It's an awesome show. All right, let's get into it. Dave, you want to do our shout out to the weekly winner of our Extra Time Fantasy League?
Sure. Do I have to make a Squid Games reference, or can I just?
You don't.
Do
no, you're allowed to not. That,
I
that's
believe it's
we can
singular.
Go.
By the way, it's Squid Game.
Correct. See, you haven't seen the show, but you're on top of it. This is like Offside and Offsides. We really got to get this
well,
right.
Well, Doyle just cares about grammar. He literally doesn't care about this show at all.
I don't even think he cares about that. He cares about correcting us on grammar.
For sure.
Like grammar in the wider world couldn't care less. But correcting us, yes, very important to Doyle.
So, shout out to Bassett Hounds, great name, which we presume is named for Cole Bassett, which this person didn't even play, but they captain Christian Arango, who had 40 points, and they put up 114 points. I think Anders has decided I'm the Rapids guy on the show, which I'll take. I don't mind that. I got a really nice Rapids kick childhood cancer jersey that I'm into. So, yeah, This is me and my guy Basset Hound doing our thing.
If you're
shredding.
The manager of Basset Hounds, I sort of feel like you're it's contractually obligated to play Cole Bassett. Like you don't. I don't know. That's tough.
Just win, baby.
I have faith
that's
in him to name your team, but he's not producing. So, all right, let's get into it. To the weekend we go. We're going to hit the Western Conference first. We're going to hit Supporters Shield first because that's what's at stake silverware-wise coming down the stretch here. The Revs chase continues, but disappointing this week at home. 2-2 draw against the Chicago Fire, who were eliminated with that draw. They are now at 66 points. Most teams have 5 games left. The Revs have 4 games remaining. The record, as I've repeated many times on this show, is 72. That's LAFC. They still hold it until it's broken. 78 points is the max for the Revs. They got to get 7 of 15 points, or 7 of 12 points, excuse me, to set the new record. That would be 2 wins, obviously, and a draw to get there. They could lose a game on this one. At DC, at Orlando, against Colorado at home, and then against Miami at home. So you're looking at the Miami game. I'm saying that's going to be 3 big points. Although last game of the season, decision day, Bruce, you never know. I mean, he's out here saying Supporter Shield doesn't really matter to me anyway, so maybe he'll just rest everybody. I don't know. At DC is a tough one, especially because it's a must-win. They're going to win the Shield. They're going to win the Shield. I think that part is safe. You saw Seattle drop points against Houston this weekend. I think that gap is too much. So I think the Revs are the Shield winners. It's really a question of history at this point.
Mm-hmm.
I've asked this question. Do they make history? Do you think they make history? Does it matter if they make history?
It matters. And I still think that they're a good bet to end up with like 73 or 74 points because they don't lose games. But this was a tough one for them. This should have been 3 points. And the way it ended up with Ignacio Aliceta just like blasting an equalizer through Matt Turner in like eerily similar fashion to how Daryl Dike scored against the Revs a few weeks back. I wrote about this in my column. It is a little bit concerning if you're a Revs fan. Turner has been slumping over the past month. For the first 3.5 years of his MLS career, if he gets a touch to it, it's not a goal. He doesn't, when I called him the best shot stopper I've ever seen in MLS, I don't mean he makes the most spectacular saves. I mean, he never gives up soft goals, but he's given up 3 or 4 of them over the past month and twice now, the other one being the draw against Columbus about a month ago. Twice now, those goals have cost the Revs points. And the way the Revs play, they're not as dominant in possession or in terms of field position as most previous Shield winners. And I'll even say last year's Union is in that group. They dominated field position with their press. The Revs don't do that. The Revs are a very bend don't break team that relies on their best players to win them games and to collect points. And Carlos Heel, it's smart to rely on him to generate goals. Gustavo Bow, Adam Buxa, they generate a lot of looks and a lot of those turn into goals. And Matt Turner doesn't make mistakes. So it makes sense to lean on Matt Turner, except Matt Turner of the past month has not been a historically elite goalkeeper. He's just been pretty good. And that is a more significant difference for the Revs than if even Andre Blake last year, as great as he was, the Union had more margin with Andre Blake than I think the Revs do with Matt Turner, potentially taking a long-term step backwards. But the flip side is it's just a month. And everybody has a down month from time to time. And if he is slumping and that's all it is, then this was the month to have it happen and get him back focused on it for the stretch run and then into the playoffs.
But it is significant, though. I think because of the gap you're talking about, this Revs team isn't a team that is consistently blowing teams out. They're winning a lot of close matches. When you look back at LAFC or teams like that in the past were rotating goalkeepers during their Supporter Shield, campaigns. This is a team that needs to rely on good goalkeeping and great goalkeeping if they want to achieve their goals. We say they've got the Supporter Shield locked up. I think they'll probably get that record, as well. But I think for the playoffs, he's got to find his way back and get that confidence back if they want to go all the way.
I can hear Bruce right now being like, hey, goals are all that matters. One goal wins. Don't ask me questions. Arena also dismissed sort of the Supporter Shield talk ahead of the weekend, saying that the Shield, quote, it wasn't a goal of the club, that they're just focused on preparing for the playoffs. That strikes me as very Bruce. Like, that's straight out of the Bruce handbook. Like, that you didn't even have to guess what he would say to that question. He was never going to get effusive about the supporters' Shield. But maybe it would be worth getting a little bit more excited, Dave, about that, because MLS Cup is no guarantee. Like, why devalue a potential, I don't know, a huge accomplishment? Well, like, look where this club has been. Like, the Revs have not been supporters' Shield contenders in a long, 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 long time.
They've also never won it. So for your fan base, why wouldn't you have that moment where you'd say, like you said, look where we've come, but also, like, enjoy this. Congratulations. Like, all of us were in this together. We all made it through some down years, and now you get to week in and week out watch this. I mean, you just think about watching the Chicago game, and it was, like, jarring to watch them drop points. And in MLS, with the way the schedule is set up and the travel and all that, you drop points. That's just a reality. And yet it stood out so much that they did against Chicago. And so I don't understand why you do this. At the same time, Bruce doesn't care. Bruce is going to do what he's going to do. He's been around doing it for this whole time. It still works, so what the hell does it matter? There's probably a level of they've already won it. How do you keep your guys motivated? And that has been a question that we've asked a lot of times. It's like, do you celebrate a supporter shield as a club? Because if you do, does your eye get off the ball in terms of trying to win MLS Cup? It has been borderline impossible to win that double. I think Toronto's...
Well, I mean, it actually makes me think of that Toronto team in 2017, even though they were blowing teams out, so it was different than the Revs. But if you remember back to that year, they actually kind of took their foot off the pedal down the stretch. Like, their worst month of the season that year was October. They once they had it locked up, they were a different team, but then they got it back for the playoffs. And it looks like, you know, whether it comes down to Matt Turner or it comes down to, you know, the attack being a little bit more clinical, because, like, let's contextualize this draw. Like, the Revs generated enough chances that it should have been 3-2 or even 4-2. And, like, some of the credit goes to the Fire for scrambling well, and their good young goalkeeper, Gabriel Slonina. You know, I thought he mostly did very well. But, like, it's not just a Matt Turner issue with the Revs suddenly being a little bit more vulnerable. When they have a chance to finish teams off, step on their neck, they have to be able to do that. And maybe that's what this kind of result and, you know, the disappointing result against the Crew a month ago, that maybe that's what this will sort of spark in them.
TBD, they're the only team in the Eastern Conference with that X next to their name. The only other team in the entire league that is in the playoffs for sure are the Seattle Sounders. We can make assumptions, but you know what those mean.
One thing on Bruce and sort of downplaying the supporter shield. I think there's an honesty to that that is, because I believe him when he says that, that sets the goal beyond that as well, which I think is helpful for a team that I think it depends on the franchise. And we've talked about this a lot with the supporter shield and what it means. And yes, you can say that they haven't won the supporter shield, and so they should be pleased with that, which they should. But I think the goal for a club like New England has been, and especially due to the pain that they've suffered in MLS Cups in the past, getting there and then consistently losing them, I think really changes the picture for them. And so it's like there's just an honesty that I think will go a long way in the locker room as well, too, to say that, like, we've got this locked up, but ultimately we don't know how long this window is going to last. Tejan's leaving. We don't know about if Books is going to stick around, exactly how it's all going to go for this team. Matt Turner is always going to have some interest abroad at some point. Does he want to go push himself? Maybe not during a World Cup year, because things seem to be going great for him right now. But there are some question marks as far as just with any team is how long can you keep this talented?
Books could be one too.
Yeah. How long can you keep this talented team together and have success and give guys new contracts or lose players, etc.? So I think he's right to sort of take set the sights a little bit further, not to diminish the supporter shield, because just as a manager, you always want to give it up to the fans and also to recognize your own accomplishments of how he's managed the team. Because coming into the year, I would have thought, oh yeah, New England, based on what we saw last year, they're going to be a threat in the playoffs. Bruce Arena always, but nobody had really picked him for the supporter shield. Or maybe when he, gosh, I can't remember. Somebody may have, but
I picked him for MLS Cup.
Okay, yeah. I think that was the more common of the two picks. But I think they've already, far out. Yeah.
Can I ask you why you can't do both? Like, why is it not possible to do both?
Well, who's done it?
To, like...
Toronto. There's been, like, one team ever. It was, like, the 2011... what was it? The 2011 LA Galaxy?
Well, to do both in the sense of to celebrate this accomplishment of the Shield, but not overdo it. To not act like it's the end-all, be-all, but to give your fans that moment...
Well,
which they haven't had a ton of.
But every team.
And also, everybody understands. If you're a Revs fan, you understand that MLS Cup is the deal. Like, you know what the Crafts want. You know what Bruce is about. You know what game
but
you've lost. And you know what has been out of your reach for your whole existence.
I understand what you're saying, but the point is, Bruce sets a culture. And he builds a team around that culture. So if this is the way he thinks that it works for his team, that's the way it works for his team. It may not be the same for Bob Bradley's team, or Greg Vanney's team, or... Caleb Porter's team, right? It might be different for every person. So, but this is Bruce sets a culture based off his personality that's top down, and it's had success. So you can't complain.
And Bruce has won 5 MLS Cups, right? In 2011, he won it winning the Supporter Shield. In 2012, he won it, I think, being the last seed in the playoffs coming in. So it's, if you're asking which one he liked better, I'd probably say they're both the same. But I mean, it's just ultimately for him, the goal is to get to that MLS Cup. That's why he's seen as the best manager and is the best manager in MLS history. So asking him to change his ways now.
And his success overall is because he stays level, which means not too high and not too low. He never gets low, right? He literally, point being, last place in the playoffs, he will never panic. But at the same time, that means you can't go out and have a parade and throw a bunch of champagne around on, I can't find a date, October 18th, when you have MLS Cup to get to.
So I just want to point out that they were second to last place in the playoffs. There's only one team they would have hosted that MLS Cup against.
Us.
Look, by the way, this conversation does put in perspective some of those Shield celebrations at Red Bull Arena or in Chicago that I was a part of.
Or Philly last year. I mean,
yeah, you know what? Where it means so much, and then
Chicago.
Maybe you fall flat. They celebrated one in Chicago, didn't they? Didn't the Red Bulls?
Red Bull, yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
Sorry, I thought you meant Chicago.
Yeah,
celebrated. I was like, when were you covering
the
Chicago Supporters Shield?
No. Look, let us know what you think, Revs fans. How do you feel about this sort of dichotomy between the Shield, between Cup, between history, and
now
putting the effort in to make
that
happen?
But here's the point for the Red Bulls fans and Revs fans: if they don't win MLS Cup. And they don't celebrate Supporter Shield.
That's
like
what
it's
I'm
a real
saying.
Trophy for the fans, you will have missed out. But if they win MLS Cup, they'll look back and say, well, that's why we didn't do it, because we were more focused on this.
I'm just saying right now your odds of like your celebration odds are very high on the Supporter Shield. And your celebration odds on MLS Cup are higher than others. But you're still rolling dice.
Don't be
like,
a data nerd. Come on, Weeby. Be better than that.
Fine. Those are the stats. I should just watch the games, although that was a draw for the Revs, so maybe not. Look, had to have it. Western Conference. Galaxy had to have it. 9-game winless run. Worst form in the league. Worst form in the league by far. Just kind of in the dumps. Looked like they were going to slip from a fairy tale.
Hasn't NYCFC not scored in like a month and a half?
Is that true?
It's been 4 straight games, I think.
I don't know, but this has been like two. This is like 2.5 months for the Galaxy. Chicharito scores. Doesn't matter how he does it, he scores. They still could get a home playoff game. I mean, they would have to keep going in this way. This was huge, Doyle. Like, it was so big that Sasha Kleshchen, was brought to tears afterwards, and we'll get to that in just a second. But this was massive for the Galaxy.
It was. A 6 well, not quite a 6-pointer because Portland are fine, but like the Galaxy had to end the streak. It's just 2 months of absolute misery, which just had come on the heels of I thought a month and a half of like really good rounding into shape, looking like a Greg Vanney team type of play. And there has been some of that during this 2-month stretch. There have been a lot of missed chances. Cabral and Grant Sear are finding good spots, but they're not putting the ball away.
Before the goal was in a pure Chicharito spot.
Well, I'm just saying, like over the course of this 2-month stretch, and it felt like there needed to be a bit of luck or something that like broke the spell. And like that, it starts with the Galaxy actually playing good soccer again. Like, throughout this game, they played really good soccer. It looked like a Greg Vanney team. And then, as David said, like, Chicharito found at least one really great spot on, you know, Julian Araujo overlapped and pulled back to the, like, you would have thought that was a goal. And then 5 minutes later, somehow, you know, Vasquez hits a low cross through the area, and it goes through Larrius Mabiala, and Chicharito's there on the back post. And, like, yes, Sebastian Blanco, you know, equalized just a couple minutes later, but then you get into extra time, and just the insane challenge from Jose Carlos Van Rankin on Efra Alvarez, and then, you know, Sasha Kljestan comes through, and, like, it felt like this was the exact type of win that the Galaxy needed to, like, put those past 2 months in the past and start playing like they were, I think, through, you know, basically mid-August, when they were getting, it felt like the Galaxy were getting better every single week, and like, oh god, once Chicharito's back, this team's gonna start racking up goals and points, and like, it didn't happen that way, and like, now maybe they can get to that point.
Yeah, 42 points, same spot they were to start the weekend in six. That's because, as we said, basically everybody around them, all the desperate teams, got results. Let's take a listen real quick to that Sasha Kljestan interview after the fact here. He got a little bit of emotional after scoring the game winner.
You've sacrificed so much for this team, not starting in your normal capacity. You've talked about what you've learned to become a leader, but tonight you get to be the hero. What did that mean to you?
It meant a lot. Sorry. I give a lot for my career, for my life. And it feels good to score again. You know, this morning I coached 13-year-old boys in the academy, and I told them, I could see the disappointment on some of the kids' faces that weren't starting in the game. And I told them I'm going to use me as an example, because tonight I'm going to play a game. And if I play 10 minutes, I'm going to be the one that makes the difference. So I just feel so good that my message to those boys, I hope they're watching tonight, that the message to the boys was real, that I showed up tonight to do my job. And you know, luckily I was able to score the goal and we win the game.
To celebrating soccer, a moment of the weekend presented by Continental Tire, and a very, very good one. We know Sasha well from, one, many years in MLS and the national team, but also being in our studios for extended periods to analyze the game, to talk about big moments, and to share moments from his career. I personally, the big thing I'm taking away from that is I'm just glad that those U13 kids have somebody like Sasha to pass down some wisdom to them, but also to pass down all the things that he's learned and understands and knows about this game. So, yeah, that meant a lot to him. It meant a lot to the Galaxy. It's nice to see him do that. And I'll just reiterate again, those strobe light effects, dumb. Ruined the entire first part of that interview. If you're watching on YouTube and you're seeing Sasha an emotional moment, just having strobe lights in his face, God, give me a break, man. Cut that out. Game operators around the world, just stop that trend. It's a terrible trend, and I'll end it there. Dave, you were going to say something far more intelligent.
No, not really. But it was a really good week for the Galaxy, and just, again, another week where you just see Julian Araujo just be a weapon down the right wing. Yeah. And the ability for Cabral to come in field, and if you leave 20 yards of open space down that right side, Vasquez or Jonah will find it, and they wait that through ball perfectly. And maybe Richie in Toronto is the only person who's just as dangerous from the fullback position one-on-one as Julian Araujo can be. Did I forget someone?
No,
you guys are giving me looks.
I would argue that Aaron Herrera has been more dangerous, but not one-on-one. So
it's like watching a legit winger go at defenders, and he puts them on skates, and he goes in and out, and now he can go both ways if he wants to, and the ball's accurate every time. And with Jorge Villafañe not being available, Hamalainen's given them some attack down the left side, but it feels like as they're getting healthy and getting Jonah back in midfield, and hopefully you'd expect next game would be legit in that role that Vasquez played, that's probably their best 11, although Victor Vasquez has been phenomenal for them. The field sort of tilts in Julian's direction. He is the outlet. He is what they play through, and teams still have trouble stopping it, and it's fun to watch.
And even when Efra comes in on the right-hand side, he cuts in as that inverted winger, and so much of what the Galaxy do comes down that right-hand flank, and some problems, I think, for Portland on the other side. But going back to Sasha real quick, just him and Vasquez have helped Vanny so much this season, I think, on the field, but also with that cultural piece. And to hear that Sasha's out coaching U13s on a match day shows you a little bit of just kind of the like impression he's making, not just on the first team and with the results, but also on the club culture, which has been you know, sorely in need for a little while there. So I played with Sasha back in Orange County, Blue Star days with, actually Nick Desloff, who's now on the staff, was he's the assistant coach, was our coach, that had me and Kai and Robbie Rogers and all these guys, Tyson Wall. It was really fun, but, it's pretty cool to see him now back getting this last stand. And, I think those two will play a big part in how far this team goes in the playoffs as well.
Love that, Kyle. And also Tyson Wall running Austin FC's academy. So the academy fruits continue to flow, which I appreciate. One thing, I don't know if we should talk about it here, if we want to talk about Texas, but so we got this tweet, Weeby. You want to do this here or should we wait for Minnesota?
Let's do it.
You want to do it here? Okay, so a Minnesota person, I don't know who on Twitter, put together that a Minnesota had gotten most of their points against the three Texas teams, which are the three bottom teams in the Western Conference. It's just a really easy way to put it. And so someone went in Loon's Coast to Coast and he really did this work, which was every team in the Western Conference, their results against the Texas teams and not against the Texas teams. And Minnesota United, he had coming out, if you take out the results against Texas teams, they would currently be, I think it's ninth in the Western Conference, so they wouldn't be a playoff team. They are one of the teams that has gotten the most success over the course of this year, the percentage of their points against the Texas teams. But he points out Vancouver and Minnesota do not play any of those three teams for the rest of the year. LA Galaxy play two of them this week. So for the Galaxy, we talked about that run of form, the struggles they've had. Do not expect them probably to continue those struggles. And if they're able to pick up six more points this week, they're probably fairly safe in looking at the playoff race. And it puts Minnesota and Vancouver sort of up against it.
Did That's you see my Dynamo this week? How dare you? Taking down the Sounders?
Kalen's so offended the whole time.
They're his Dynamo now. They're his Dynamo now. Beat Seattle, and all of a sudden, ownership returns to the
Chicago gets a point. I'm rocking the hat. Let's go.
I know. I like the red one. I have the blue one. I'll have to get that one out for a future show. But yeah, Wednesday night, a bunch of games.
Texas, right? So Vancouver beat a Texas team this weekend?
I will not even respond to that. By the way, Minnesota beat a Texas team this weekend. Speaking of teams that needed a result, they had to have it. 1-0 Minnesota against Austin FC. Adrian Heath called it a playoff game. Tyler Miller then said it was not a playoff game, that you can't treat games like that, that it puts too much on them, amps people up. Interesting back and forth there between folks in the same organization and on the same team. But yeah, Minnesota had to have it. They got it. How'd they do it?
I mean, they finally had Reynoso, Fragapane, Lud, and Huno together in the starting lineup. And when you have that kind of talent out there, you kind of find ways to win. They weren't great at any point. They weren't even especially good in this game. But if you look at the shots they generated, if you look at the chances they generated against this Austin team, you trust those guys on the Minnesota side to pot at least one of them, and Fragapane got it. On the flip side, I thought Austin was a better team in this game. That they controlled play. They generated a ton of chances as well. If you watch the last 10 minutes of the game, it's kind of a miracle that it ended up being 1-0 for Minnesota United. I thought Austin was going to get one. They are so much better with Driussi and Gite in there. I mean, if they had those guys from the start of the season, we would still be talking about Austin and their playoff chances. It's made that much of a difference. That said, you know, Minnesota's probably a playoff team, and Austin definitely aren't, and that difference came through in this game.
Cecilio Dominguez has something to answer for that back post spinner that he just missed on, had the whole goal looking at him.
But you are seeing him get in the spots he should, because you have GTA now. He's not a number nine, and he's not a pure chance-creating winger. He is like a second forward coming off the wing, which is what he's been able to do.
Yeah. Let's talk Real Salt Lake, Colorado Rapids, Rocky Mountain Cup. It's been a roller coaster with Pablo. No sense of consistency here, and in some ways that's okay because the highs for RSL have been pretty high. Now, there have been some lows, but Pablo says, hey, goldfish mentality. Just keep it rolling, keep it rolling. 3-1, Demir, Rubio Rubin, Rusnak, Julio off the Anderson Julio off the bench, Aaron Herrera as a like Andy Nahar-esque drive forward center back. does Pablo have a chance at this job? Like, I mean, I kind of feel like he does right now because there isn't ownership. Maybe you just go short-term with Pablo until you finish that side out. But RSL increasingly looks like they're going to make the playoffs. Just like Montreal, they were a team that we all buried. They stayed in the same spot, fifth in the Western Conference, 42 points. This was a huge win against their rivals.
It was a huge win, and they played such fun soccer. And they've mostly been playing fun soccer under Pablo. And like, part of it is that it's chaos. because he switched the formation and he switched the principles of the play, like, immediately upon coming in. So now they're basically a 3-5-2 team. They try to press high for the most part. And, like, they weren't doing that under Freddy Juarez. So any game that they play, they're going to have to deal with counterattacks going, you know, transition moments. Like, Portland scored 6 on them a couple of weeks ago, and, like, that wasn't surprising at all because Portland have always been so good in those types of games. The flip side, though, is that Aaron Herrera is getting forward. It was from wing back. Now it's from right center back. It's in that Andy Nahar role, as Weeby said. He's got 10 assists on the season. There are not a lot of defenders in MLS history who have put up double-digit assists in a season. I can't think of one, actually. Damir Krylock and Rubio Rubin are just such a natural center forward, or, you know, pairing up top, because Rubin wants to make those clever little runs through the lines. And, you know, Krylock is a back post monster, but also kind of a playmaker. I mean, he's a midfielder by trade who's now playing as, like, a second forward. And then that has allowed Albert Rusnak to sit in the hole and just be a classic number 10. He's got two goals and 7 assists in 9 games under Pablo. You know, in the previous 20 games, I think he had, like, 4 goals and 4 assists. So, like, he's actually getting to be a playmaker now. Pablo's using his bench. Anderson Julio is now, like, the El Seno of the Rocky Mountains, or the Wasatch Mountains, I guess. I'm not going to sit here and say that everything is going right, because they're 5 wins, 4 losses, no draws since Pablo took over. I almost feel like we should toss out the first of those games, which was, like, 36 hours after Freddy Juarez left, and it was a 4-1 loss. So, like, 5 wins and 3 draw or 3 losses in the 8 real games since Pablo took over, that's pretty good. But what's mind-bending to me is that, like, Pablo Mascherani, as head coach of the Colorado Rapids, like, he did a good job of getting a lot of buy-in and creating a really solid defensive team with that identity, and they played the ugliest, most unwatchable soccer in the entire world.
You're saying, like, the Rapids back in the day.
The Rapids, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. This team is so much fun. And, like, putting Herrera, who, again, is one of the best overlapping attacking fullbacks / wingbacks in the entire league, putting him as a center back and still having him both underlap and overlap while putting in another attacking wingback in at right wingback, like, it opens up so many possibilities for how this team can attack going forward. And, like, they win, and it's tactically interesting, and the fans are loving it right now, and you can see from the body language that the players absolutely love it as well. So, like, it's become one of the best stories in MLS over the past month.
So the only thing I'd say is, and I don't disagree with anything, is the way they attack is still similar to the Rapids in that it is very direct, and it is a ton of 50-50s in the air. And look at the goals they score, and that's why Damir Krylock is useful in this second forward role, because he's massive. And he wins everything in the air. And he flicks it on for Rubin, or he flicks it down for Rusnak, and they're dangerous from all those moments. And they can't counter-press around those moments as well, and they've done that all very well. So that's part of the issue with Pablo, is they don't control how they score and how they win games as well as other teams. And that's, I think, where you get the huge ups and downs. Because if the ball doesn't bounce off a 50-50 that game, then they're not creating as many chances, and they're not as dangerous. Now, this one, they scored early as well, so that changed things. They sat in a while and they allowed Colorado to have the ball, because why not? You have the lead. And that kind of continued throughout after Rubin scores the second goal and the Rapids bring on Nomley and 18 other attacking players and try and win this game. So I just think that's the one thing that stands out with RSL in terms of their ceiling. But in terms of talent and performing at their highest level, it's been awesome to see what he's done. And with Herrera, it makes sense. The dude is an NFL safety at fullback, So of course he could step in and play as that second center back or that third center back, and also goes to the reason he could be useful for a men's national team because he's flexible and can play a ton of roles. But I don't know. What do I know? What am I going to talk about? You know, MLS and all this stuff. But it's been fun to watch him used in that way, and it's just fun to watch him do his thing and continue to progress and continue to be, I think, one of the better stories himself in MLS.
I think Demir Krylov has to be, it's five now, finalists for the Landon Donovan MLS MVP. He used to be three. It's five. I think he absolutely deserves to be, not in the front three, we already established this, not going to argue it again, but to me, he would be in that fifth spot right now. Based on production, based on sort of expectations and how it's all gone, based on sort of resilience that this team has had. I mean, every report is he is just a massive presence in that locker room, and certainly we already see it on the field. But if you look at his production as well, Demir Krylov's one of those guys in this league that just doesn't get enough credit.
Yeah.
We should be talking about him more. Kalen, do you want the chaos that is LAFC San Jose, or do you want Vancouver Sporting Kansas City?
I'll take LAFC San Jose.
He had to. It was his right. pre-weekend pick of the weekend.
I did hype that one, coming into it. And I was concerned for LAFC because I think they've lost twice of late to San Jose. And that had been a good matchup for LAFC for quite some time, mainly because of the way San Jose plays and the way they isolate individual one-on-one man marking system, and how that kind of puts you at a deficit when you go against the caliber of players that usually LAFC has. Now, San Jose have changed their tactics a bit to be a little bit more pragmatic at times and not completely run all over the field in the same way. And LAFC, frankly, have not had their full arsenal for most of the season. So it has shifted the dynamic of this relationship the other way. LAFC, though, here come out and go the other direction. And really, Arango, he just continues to be just all of the threat for LAFC. And, you know, even on the first goal, the little back heel that ends up finding Musovski, just so much quality. And then you see over time, especially when Rodriguez comes in late, and you see what a difference he can be if you were able to have him and Vela potentially. I know he's like back in training. They keep saying maybe next week or maybe next week.
What's Instagram say, Kalen? Give us the Instagram update.
No,
we need it.
I actually went to...
Is this a story?
Because
stories go away. Is it a reel? Is it a post? What are we...
I looked up some actual reporters who were saying that it was going to be a week. You know, every day they're following up and asking to see if he can come back soon. But, you know, I think LAFC, this was a huge win for them and keeps them alive in the playoff hunt. And for San Jose, disappointing and some big questions because it looks like the playoffs, they're not mathematically eliminated, I don't think, but I think they're maybe 8 or 9 points off right now. So
yeah, they're not making it to the playoffs.
Yeah, it's not looking good.
They're 8 points
although
off.
Every team about last week is now like potentially going to make it.
Yeah, that's true. That's a good point.
Did I see Mateus Almeida throw down a halftime five spot on the subs?
Yeah.
Did he do a line change? I missed that.
I don't know. There was something that he did here. I feel bad because I said it without knowing exactly what it was. But there have been some question marks about his approach and what his future is going to be. The rumors
but
still
San
swirl.
Jose plays two more Texas teams, so watch out. That's
hey, they got a chance, baby. That's the way this
Kalen's
thing works.
So
Vancouver
offended.
Too.
He's so heated every time it's years.
Have you guys watched Kalen? Darwin Quintero lately?
Those are the patsies. Let's hit Darwin Quintero because we didn't watch him enough, and maybe Houston didn't see him enough on the field. Minnesota fans are in our mentions right now saying, hey, hold up, this is like the exact same thing that happened in Minnesota. When we played him, we were often productive in one, and we didn't do either of those two things. What happened to this season for Houston? Like, should they have just played Darwin Quintero more? Should it just be like, hey, look, I know you're going for something, but he is your best player by far, and if you can't unbalance teams, if you don't have somebody who can make a difference, you're not going to win a ton of games? Like, what happened this year? Because beating Seattle at home, yeah, I get it. That's big.
Yeah, he's been great, go ahead.
I just think that if you're in the midst of a 16-game losing or winless streak, there's probably a point in there where the coaching staff should look at each other and say, maybe we should start playing our best player a little bit more. Maybe we should get him on the field. And, like, granted, Darwin is not going to high press or do anything defensively in the way that Tab Ramos is wanted. Darwin is, by all accounts, not the best sort of locker room guy. But Darwin is also the type of guy who can create a goal like Maxi Arruti's and can score a goal like the second one from this weekend, which is just, I mean, goal of the year material or close enough.
But the
he
point,
played 200 minutes.
But the
he
point
played
of them
200 minutes
in,
before September.
But the point of them coming in as a coaching staff and group was we want to create something different. We want to have a high pressing group. This is how we're going to be successful in MLS. And then are you really going to tank that out the gates for the 34-year-old who
I didn't say out the gates. But at some point during the 16-game, the single-season record, 16-game winless streak, yeah, you probably need to rethink your tactics and rethink your personnel. Like, okay, we don't have the team or the tactical acumen to institute a Red Bull-style high press that takes the league by storm and squeezes more out of this sort of under-talented group than other people think is there. Like, at some point, they needed to. And look, since Darwin has been in the starting lineup, 7 games, they're 3-2-2. That's coming off the 16-game winless skid. Like, I don't think this was a playoff team either way. But if they, and I'm not saying that he should have been starting every game, but it is bizarre that they weren't at least using him as a 30, 35-minute super sub in some of these close games that they played throughout the summer.
I agree with that part as well. I will say this, coming out of, not this game, just watching Houston in general, if I'm a coach or a GM who's looking for a job, because we don't know what it'll look like under new ownership in Houston, this would be really attractive to me. Because I think when you look at the group, it feels like they have a lot of the like necessary MLS pieces. They just don't have the big spend pieces. And you look at Columbus, and when Caleb Porter and Tim Bezbachenko took over and Jonathan Mensah was already there and Giassi Zardes was already there and you had a lot of, you know, Harrison Offal and a few MLS lifers and all those pieces, which you need to build a competitive team. Feels like a lot of that's already in Houston. It's the crown jewels to get them over the top that don't exist. And you get a guarantee from ownership that they want to be competitive, which is what we've heard, and they want to change the way things operate in that market as well, with the way Paul Holliker started to push the academy in the right direction. I think it's the most interesting project out there.
Let's get to that question. What's the most attractive open coaching job right now?
Because that one's not.
But first, to do that.
That one isn't.
It's just, an unknown bit because you have new ownership.
It's an open GM job. Open GM job. So there
yes.
you go.
There is some question marks swirling. This is your Mark Dos Santos left the Caps in a very good place update. Vancouver, 2-1 winners at home against Sporting Kansas City, baby. They're 1 point out of the final playoff spot. They would have jumped that line, but everybody around them won as well. They are 5-2-2 post Mark Dos Santos. Yeah, that's working out pretty well for them. They just need a little bit more luck, and it looks like Sartini might be, I don't know, could he get this job? Like, is that within the realm of possibility right now?
Wouldn't be surprising if they make the playoffs, but I think the thing that stands out with Vancouver, and you watch them, is it's the first time they haven't played scared in years. They were always so hesitant to open the game up, so hesitant to be aggressive, so hesitant to push numbers forward, whatever it was, because it was different every game. Now it's like they're just out there playing and it feels like there's energy to what they do. They're aggressive with their passing, even if they lose the ball. All these things that they're doing. And I think you could feel the atmosphere in BC Place late last night where it was different than it's been probably since Pedro Morales was on the field doing his thing for Vancouver. And it's been pretty fun to watch. And it's I thought they'd make the playoffs, even though their record is one of the tougher ones. You beat SKC. That's how you do that. And that was a big win.
Yeah. I mean, Ryan Gauld has been a season changer for them. I think either he or Christian Arango is the newcomer of the year. And his ability to get in pockets of space and sort of link play together. But then the other, I was going to say under the radar acquisition, but I don't think it's under the radar anymore, is Brian White. Like, I thought Brian White was a good pickup. I always had him rated as like a top quality backup type center forward who could maybe, you know, score 10, 12 goals at most if you gave him 2,500 minutes. He's got 10 goals and 3 assists now in about 1,500 minutes for the Caps. And he's doing like all the like the Jossie style hard runs that occupy center backs, or the Wando style float to the back post, you know, and like Jedi mind trick make the fullback forget you exist stuff. And like his chemistry with Gault and with Christian Dahomey and Deber Caicedo, who have both been really good, the Caps keep giving themselves a shot. They're playing with real confidence. As you said, they're not scared. And, you know, Vanni Sartini deserves a ton of credit. All the stuff that I was saying about Pablo Mascherani and how much fun he's – how much more fun he's made RSL, that applies to Vanni Sartini in Vancouver as well, because this is like – this is a top 10 watchability team right now, and I don't think the Caps have ever been one of my 10 favorite teams in the league to watch, ever.
I was about to say, how many weekends or late nights have we finished, all of us?
Oh my God.
Watching Vancouver, 10 p.m. Eastern, 10:30 p.m. Eastern, home game.
Yeah.
You settle in, you're like, this could be entertaining.
It's probably Vancouver, San Jose.
Yeah.
Like, I'm not going to lie. Yeah. I had scheduled in that I was going to wake up and finish that game this morning because I knew I wasn't going to make it last night. And I couldn't turn it off. It was awesome. It was fun. The atmosphere, everything's going on. And I was like, this is great. Javane Brown is the best draft pick. He has played right back all year.
If we still had Rookie of the Year as an award, he would be.
Luckily, we have first year college player of the year. We fill these holes on extra time, Doyle.
That's what we do.
We fill these holes.
He's played right back all year. He plays left back. He hits the left foot across for the first goal, which he uses to set up Zusi so he can chop back like 15 times the rest of the game. And Zusi's going flying. It was fun to watch.
Just to bring things down a notch, Vancouver doesn't change the way they play, which is fun and exciting, but they also did just get run over by Seattle. And if you look at their remaining schedule, they play Seattle on decision day. They play Portland midweek, and they have LAFC as well, who seem to be getting healthier. So it's going to be they're still outside
look
of the playoffs.
Look what they did
right
to KC, Kalen. This is all they need. It works.
I'll point out, first of all, that Seattle game was like much closer than the scoreline indicated. And second of all, Vancouver was missing their entire defense. Like, they didn't have any of their starting defenders.
And
they got their defense back for this game, and they strangled Sporting Kansas City in this game. Sporting didn't generate a shot on target in the second half, and this is for, like, the second-best attack in the league.
Weeby, you said the MVP.
Don't come for my Whitecaps, Kalen, all right? Gasman is the Rapids and Impact guy, or CF Montreal guy. I'm the Whitecaps
guy. I'm not a Whitecaps guy. I thought I was a Whitecaps guy. Weeby, you said there's five finalists for MVP. How many for goalkeeper of the year? Is it three?
I think it might be up to five. I don't know. We can make the rules now. The four, you say?
There's Blake, Turner, Crapo, and Steve Clark.
Sorry, I meant what? Will he be a finalist
officially?
The way that officially is done.
I don't know, because they do the voting now. I bet if they do five for MVP, it's five for goalkeeper
so
as well. But
Maxime
people don't
Crapo
team. They don't argue as
list.
Much over the other awards and finalists.
Crapo deserves. I was on all those lists.
Yeah. Yeah.
Can we just ask a quick question about Kansas City? Peter Vermees did not go to his bench. For the entirety of the set, he didn't make a sub, and they were down 2-1. Why?
I don't know, man.
He said afterwards he just had faith in the guys that were in there, but I don't know. That seems
no. He did make a sub. He brought Roger
like an interesting
on at
decision
halftime.
To me.
Weeby.
So he made one sub.
Yeah, he made a sub at halftime.
So he made one
he brought
sub.
Roger on in center mid, and then yeah.
And I guess I'm looking through who he's got on his bench right here, and he's right. There's not really. I mean, what, you're going to get Wilson Harris? Cameron Duke would be the guy. They took off Maori to bring in Roger, but then it's Dia, it's Rad, it's Punchech, Jake Davis.
But isn't this
Grayson Barber?
Isn't this what we would have said about a lot of the guys on the Revs who have earned consistent playing time and helped that team win a Supporters Shield this year?
Or
isn't that what we would have said about a ton of guys on Seattle? Isn't this, I mean, literally Kellen Rowe was on Sporting Kansas City last year.
But
isn't this
on,
what we
no
would have
Emma
said
there's
about...
no Emma Boateng or Kellen Rowe on this
no,
bench.
But
I'm,
there
just
is,
gonna, I'm just
but
saying.
But there Emma is Boateng. An Ethan Doblier. There is a Reed Whiting.
Emma's
Baker,
been good.
There is a Joss Atencia. There are these guys who are one in Barber, okay. A legit
and
college
this is,
player who has come out that they're supposed to develop. Peter Vermees comes on before every season and complains that no one talks about how they've signed 13 to 15 homegrowns. And they're the only team in the league that can field a full team of homegrowns. And then he doesn't play them. Cameron Duke has played and played well, and you don't get out there in a game like this when you're down 2-1 on the road. against Vancouver, a good team. Okay, this is a game you might lose. Give those players an opportunity to prove it or create an opportunity. And if you can't, if you've not developed those players to that level, then there's something wrong. Because you have invested in this, and this is a future for your club. And if you can't get players from the prospect to useful player, then there's something broken in your system.
Cameron Duke, he's got to get on the field.
He could be their Christian Roldan, man. I love Cameron Duke, what I've seen of him. And, they got to get him. Vermees has to get him more minutes. And, games like this where the energy and Duke's, I think, intelligence and picking up space, that could have changed the game. But, of course, it's all... it's all hypothetical because Pierre Vermees doesn't make subs. How it's always been.
I'd just like to say shout out to Reed Baker Whiting. Legend. Or is it Whiting Baker? Now I don't know.
Now you don't even know. This kid could be playing for Liverpool and I'm going to be like, Whiting Baker, Baker Whiting. I mean, Dave's got just driven into my mind that I have zero idea. Here's the question. What's the most attractive open coaching job in the league right now? Open, Vancouver Whitecaps. Open, FC Cincinnati. Open, Chicago Fire. Open, FC Dallas. Open, Toronto FC. Open, Real Salt Lake. That's six jobs.
Oh, sorry. That was a GM job. My bad.
That's a GM job, yeah. Correct.
I think you know...
What's the most attractive job?
You're going to get a lot of money to spend in Toronto. You're going to get, I think, a lot of money to spend in Chicago. And that matters. And those are big market teams with owners with ambition. Obviously, that ambition has panned out much more in one of those markets than in the other.
I don't know. You could argue the other way. You could actually argue they just did it on different ends of the spectrum. The Fire did it out of the gate, whereas Toronto FC were just a garbage fire out of the gate. And then Toronto got better, and Chicago got worse, and now they both have basically accomplished close to the same amount of things, and they're trying to rebuild.
So the only thing I would say is I think... that was a dramatic moment in my house.
What? Just
a wooden sign just fell off the window.
The freeze of your eyes. I was like, okay, full pot. I was like, what could it be? Full pot of coffee? No. Feels like maybe that's what we're at here.
It was a wooden sign with a John Mayer quote on it, so it wasn't even mine.
Oh my God. Even better. Yeah. Even
so
better.
So the only thing I'd say is I think Toronto's locked.
I don't.
You don't need to.
You live your... Hold on. You're like, you got the live, laugh, love, and you've got... What's John Mayer
She's
saying to you on a daily
like
basis?
Neon. That's... It's clearly...
That's what it says?
It's clearly not about
me. This is making me so uncomfortable.
Can I continue with my MLS point, which is...
Yes.
I think Toronto's locked into more contracts, and it's stuck a little bit more. And so if you are someone who's coming in, Chicago is a cleaner board to work off of than Toronto. Plus, you don't have to answer the question of, are we win now? Are we rebuilding? Are we win later? All those things. If you can't get out of Josie's contract, which would be shocking in an open window that those two, that club and him, would not choose to separate, you don't even have a DP spot to spend in Toronto. And then you look at Chicago, and I think they're off almost all of their contracts because they brought in 14 players 2 years ago, mainly on two-year deals. So you've got a ton of flexibility, which isn't easy to build from nothing. But if you're taking over one of the two, I think there's more possibility there.
It depends on who you are. Go ahead.
No, go ahead. You're onto something.
It depends on who you are. To me, if say Bob Bradley doesn't end up re-upping with LAFC, I think for a manager of that stature and experience to have the bankroll and the ambition of being able to go to a Toronto or a Chicago makes a lot of sense. I think there's some real danger if you're another manager, maybe a Lucci or somebody who's, you know, allured by the idea of getting some of that support and around you, where I really think a club like Real Salt Lake to me stands out as number one, where they are in the playoffs position right now, where they are in the table, what they have, the facilities there, and just a little bit outside of the, where you can actually get some time to maybe build something. Now, the ownership group is a big question mark, right? Where you don't know exactly where that lands, which is going to make you feel a little bit uncertain, or maybe a lot bit uncertain right now. But at that always, to me, even I used to think about this as from a domestic player's perspective, where, yeah, the idea of going to a big club or playing at one of the, that sounds really fun, right? But then next thing you know, it's like, they're going to make it international signings. It's going to be hard to get playing time, even if you feel like you've deserved it over them. There's just a lot more that kind of comes into the inner workings of a club of that, of the bigger size. And I don't know if it's always a good thing or a healthy platform for you to find success. So I think sometimes the smaller clubs or whatever you want to call them, are a more attractive place, because you can really not deal with any of the kind of nonsense around it, and you can really put your fingerprints on something and have some time to build something. And I think Real Salt Lake, to me, has always been a club like that.
Are you saying Carlos Cosley is not the big-time international signing? Or Luis Lundin?
But that's exactly why going to Houston, if you beat them out in training or on the field, you feel like you actually have a chance to potentially play over a guy that's making, you know, $400,000 or $500,000 or whatever it was at the time. And it's really just about kind of the performance. And that was not always the case, I would say, with a Chicago, where if it's between you and Nery Castile, even if Nery's chilling.
Let's go through some of these teams and just sort of like lay out what they might need or what they might be looking for. Vancouver Whitecaps. We just talked about them. Sartini has got them playing some kind of way. He has injected personality into their team. I just like the vibes he gives off. That's
You're
not everything, obviously, but it's something.
Tucked into jeans with a belt guy, aren't you?
You love think so? That, like... I didn't consider myself that, but I've been in the Midwest for a year now, so I don't know. I got the woven belt. You know,
that's
doesn't
what
matter
Sartini
how fat
goes. I think he's a woven belt guy.
The woven belt is a strong look. What should the Vancouver Whitecaps be looking for, Doyle?
Yeah, I mean, Vanni Sartini probably. They have already, it happened kind of off the radar, but they have already built out a really good core, like young core of players. Like Crepeau is only 26 or 27. Gault is 25. They have Caio Alexandre, who I thought was really good before his season-ending injury. Dahomey has had a, you know, not quite a Hany Mukhtar level year one to year two, progression, but he's been a lot better. I like Debar Caicedo a lot. Obviously, Brian White, whether he keeps up this pace or not, he's a good MLS player. There are questions on the back line, but I think what has made this so exciting for Vancouver fans over the past couple of months is the amount of development that they've seen within the talent that's already on the roster. So whether it's Vanni Sartini or, you know, mystery box coach, you know, number two, they have to get someone who can get that kind of buy-in and that kind of game over game improvement from the players who are there. That is the most important. Like, the Caps spend more money than people realize. They're not a small spending team by any stretch, but they're also not going to go out there and drop Atlanta United money. I think they have, for this sort of cycle, already spent what they intend on the players who have arrived and who are coming, because they have Pedro Vite, the Ecuadorian playmaker, coming next year on a young money deal. So they have to make sure, whether it's Vanni Sartini or someone else, the coach is on the sort of same wavelength as the front office in terms of what the project is, and get that out of the players, because these guys are good and almost all of them can get better. And that's what the project is about in Vancouver for 2022 and 2023.
All right, we'll go through Cincinnati. We'll go through the Fire, Dallas, Toronto, and RSL in more detail on future shows. If you have thoughts on those, let us know. But we got to hit the Eastern Conference. We'll start with the Hudson River Derby. New York Red Bulls won. Christian Gonzalez, third minute in.
Yet?
Boom.
We haven't even talked. Whoa.
No. I know. The Red Bulls.
It's two non-playoff teams.
Wow.
The Red Bulls weren't dead. They're still one hand, you know, they're reaching out from under the ground right now. New York City are burying themselves. We've got, like, Jonathan Sanchez is, I don't know Jonathan Sanchez other than that he's an NYCFC fan that lives in my mentions. We don't talk about them enough, saying that we never respect them. And he hit my mentions this weekend saying, I think it's time to bury NYCFC for the season. I give you permission to not put any respect on our name this week. That's a big turnaround for Jonathan. He's been like one track mind for a long time. He's giving up. It's over, he says. Both New York's under the playoffs. One side feels okay about that. The other side doesn't. Take us into the, give us the heartbeat of the city, Dave.
I think this was the highest attended game of the season so far at Red Bull Arena. So that's what it is. This was a huge moment, and I can say from the people I know around the Red Bull fan base, it feels like they are rallying and there's excitement and there's belief that it's going in the right direction. And I think we've spent a year talking about the pieces that Kevin Thelwall and Gerhard Stuber have brought in, and they didn't get production out of a lot of it. And now a lot of those guys are starting to hit for them. And so now you're looking at a young group that's getting better and better, and they've been able to rely on some domestic pieces to help them get there. And Sean Nealis has been massive at the center of the back three. They've played a rolling group of center backs and fullbacks alongside him now, and they've been able to keep teams down, which is why they've been able to win games by one goal, or specifically 1-0, over and over again. And then you see Omir Fernandez start to give them performances. Casares coming out of the Red Bull 2 setup as well. That's kind of the core of what I think Red Bulls always will be. But Yearwood has been good. Klamal has been good. Fabio has been good over the last few weeks, and that's been big for them to continue along. It feels like everyone that I know thinks they're going to make the playoffs. And now you start to see like the confidence of, well, we've done it for 12 straight years, and this is what we do. And yesterday was another example of that.
They've scored more than a single goal in a game once since July. That's 14 games, man. Like, in this run of good form, the last 6-7 games, I mean, this has primarily come against an NYCFC team who's, you know, in a tailspin at least, and then against Miami and Cincinnati teams.
Just say the Texas of the East.
Yeah, the Texas of the East. There you go.
The Texas of the East.
I'm not saying that the Red Bulls aren't playing better. They are. And I think Gerhard Struber shifting out of the 4-4-2 diamond and into this game, it was more of a 3-4-2-1. He's played a 4-2-3-1 as well. I think it's made the Red Bulls tougher to break down, because once you get past that first line of their pressure, they still have more guys who can then come and apply a second wave of pressure. Whereas I thought too often the two front runners in the 4-4-2 would get eliminated too easily, and they wouldn't have good lateral field coverage either. So I think they are better, but like 13 of the past 14 games, they have failed to score more than a single goal. It's hard for me to believe that this is not going to come crashing down to earth. And look, they're going away to Columbus, who are the last team to beat them. Then they're going to DC, and like DC, we talked about, like they're missing some of their key attackers, but those guys are expected to be back for that game. Then they have Montreal at home. So they have, and then they go, and then they have Atlanta at home. So they have still a ton of 6-pointers left. Obviously they're in control of their own destiny. And they've done a good job to get back here, but oof, like there are some red flags if you look for them.
How would you be feeling in that NYCFC locker room right now, Kalen?
Not great. I think they haven't scored in their last four games, so the goals have just completely dried up. And you know, part of it is, you know, like Tati's always going to be a volume chance striker where he's going to need, you know, I think he leads the league in shots
right? And dives,
and yeah, the one with his face, and this one was good in the first half, but yeah, I mean, it's like he's not afraid to shoot, right? But some of the decision making feels sometimes where he goes for ones that are just very low probability, right? And he just kind of has a one-track mind, and it kind of, you sort of question, yeah, when he's on and it's flowing, he can get into a good rhythm and the confidence gets going. But when it's off, it can be disruptive, where I feel like the team starts to search for him and focus on that. And then he's going for some sort of speculative chances at best, and not really looking to get others involved. Now, Eber is not also fully fit yet, obviously coming off the injury, and they just haven't gotten consistent contribution. And then you start looking at some of the injuries that they've had as well, as far as just sort of chance creation through the wings. And then that's been a problem as well too. But I think it's going to be tight. You know, it's going to come down to the wire for them, obviously. But the next ones, you know, because they're going to play against DC, Atlanta. They do have a game against Inter Miami, Philly on the last day. Chicago's looked better as of late. So, but the big problem has just been for them is getting goals. And right now, it looks like it's either Tati or no one.
Well, yep. There's no one right now, unfortunately, for Ronnie Dialek. Got to figure this one out.
Let's talk to Atlanta. I thought Taylor made a good point on the broadcast about using James Sands as the third center back. It brought Maxi Morales so deep in trying to build out. He's not around goal, and it makes them less dangerous. And not just that specifically. I think also the bigger point was Ronnie Dialek hasn't really gotten a pulse on what's his best group and how he uses it. And Anton Tinnerholm's the best fullback in MLS. It's a huge loss. No one's going to deny that. But every team's struggling with something right now. And the thing that we had said about NYCFC for 4 years now is they have the deepest roster. So they have to find a way to get good performances and cover. James Sands started playing center back because they had injuries 2 years ago and they needed him to step in and solidify things. So there has to be some solution there going forward.
Let's keep it going on the Eastern Conference because we're running out of time. We spent like an hour on the West. Sorry, Eastern Conference folks out there. Atlanta go to Toronto 2-0. Wild game. Araujo gets the first goal. A couple red cards come later. A big win for Atlanta. A lot of enjoyment for me watching the look, that Toronto FC tunnel has seen a lot of things. Let's just say that. The BMO tunnel, that is...
It could tell some stories.
Things pop off in there. Yeah, things pop off in there. I wish we had the uncut tapes over the years, but what are you going to do about it? How big was this for Atlanta? Did they prove anything to you, or was this sort of like, hey, you got it done, that's good enough?
Yeah, I didn't take anything away from this new about Atlanta. They played a Toronto team that's a Texas of the East, and they were able to put up one goal until the 93rd minute when Moreno puts away that shot. Moreno looks dangerous still. He's much more aggressive, and now that he's attacking players north to south, you can see he is shifty enough to get by guys. And obviously, Araujo gets you a goal in a big moment. There's talent on this team. It's still not a team that's come together and is overwhelmingly great and, you know, has specific ways that they can beat you week in and week out. So I still walk away from this one and say Atlanta's a crapshoot, whether or not they can make the playoffs.
Moreno drew 9 fouls in this game, by the way. That's pretty incredible.
Yeah, he was running in midfield. No,
pass and move. He's the best in the league at just like, okay, as soon as I release the ball, I'm just going to take more space. And it's not patterned really. He doesn't do it like, say, you know, prime Federico Higuain did it where he was like sort of rearranging the pieces on the chessboard. But like, if you just are skillful and quick and always moving after you release the ball, you're going to add value to your team. And right now it feels like Atlanta's attack is largely built around that. When they get Joseph back and healthy, which is maybe at this point an if and not a when.
I don't think we can say when for this season.
Yeah. But if they get him back healthy, though, I think I still expect it to sort of click for Atlanta. And to be fair, they've been a playoff caliber team since getting rid of Gabriel Heinze. They have played at a playoff pace. So there's nothing that they proved or nothing that is different about this game. You know, you should win in Toronto if you're a decent team this year.
The Texas of the East. Speaking of FC Cincinnati, losers at home once again. They've won one game in their new stadium. A single game. Just one. They might have got a draw on this one. They didn't get the call
and
stoppage time you referenced that earlier.
So you think Urso fouled Hagelin to foul so-and-so to foul so-and-so?
I think if that's where you're going to look at it, then yes, it still is a foul in the box because Urso is grabbing and pushing Hagelin. I don't really think there's a foul on Hagelin, on Schlegel. That's just a little bit of contact. It's a set piece. These things happen. Schlegel understands where Brandon Vasquez is and just absolutely throws his arm into his face and cups and pulls on his first appearance into the game. It was up there with Schlegel coming in to save a PK in the playoffs with its just amount of immediate dramatic effect. It was incredible. I understand how maybe on first look you might have let it go. And I don't know. It's a foul. It's a foul. It probably should have been a PK. That's just my opinion. Orlando City don't care. They get a 1-0 win. Good for them. Club de Foot, CF Montreal, they're not going by Club de Foot anymore, apparently. Philadelphia Union, 2-2, late goal for Montreal in this one. And Columbus won 4-0 against Inter Miami. Giassi with the brace. That second goal, the dunk, that is an incredible, incredible finish. And I just wanted to bring out, let's see, am I missing it here? Oh, yep, here we go. Here's Phil Neville. Quote, "This league is brutal. At the end of the season, you're going to get a contract or you're not." He was talking about his players because it sure seems like he's going to stick around. But that's a different tone than he had a couple weeks ago. Can't blame the referees when you lose 4-0. That's the way it works. Any thoughts on those games? Anything that stands out to you between Orlando, Montreal, and Philly, and Columbus? Columbus are still alive, I guess.
I mean, if Columbus
down at 37 points, only 4 points out.
Yeah, if they win, I think they have a midweek game against Atlanta. I got to check the schedule now. But they have been playing well recently. It's not great, but they've been playing well. Sorry, their midweek game is at Nashville, so that's a tough one. And then they host the Red Bulls on the weekend. So they've been playing well, and they have in Jossie Zard as a match winner, and they're getting a little bit more from their wingers lately. They weren't getting much from them all season long, but really it's like they're just not slowing the game down. If you watch the way Columbus played throughout, you know, most of the season, it was like watching the U.S. play in Panama. Like, they would get on the ball and just stop. Like, anytime they had the defense disorganized, they didn't press the issue. They're starting to press the issue now, get guys running forward. And you know that when Jossie Zard is in those positions, he's going to score goals. And, you know, especially against a back line as subpar as Miami's was.
On Montreal's side, this is a great performance. They pushed the issue. They pushed the play. And then you get the goal from Milevich, who it sticks to their what they've done well now, and similar to what Colorado's done, of finding these assets that other people either aren't paying attention to or aren't giving opportunities to. And so they've made trades inside of MLS, but this is, you know, a young American youth international who's coming from Argentina, doesn't have a club. You bring him in. Ismael Kone as well, they signed last week, or signed a couple weeks ago, who's Montreal native, who was training over in Europe, and they find space on their roster for these players. And then that gives tools for Wilfred Nancy to have, because it felt like the thing that was going to hold this team back was depth. And just, it takes so many pieces to make a playoff run. They lost Mason Toy. Kyoto has been in and out with injuries. Would they have enough pieces? And they've been able to continue to find more pieces. Joaquin Torres, of course, the first to really elevate his game of that bench group, and now a full-time starter. And now you get Milevich in this one, linking up in midfield and playing well. So for Montreal, they've continued to empower different players, and they've been able to get performances over and over. And this was a huge performance for them.
It was a huge performance. It was a brutal result.
Philly drop points.
No, this is drop points from Montreal with the way they played. I mean, they controlled this game. Philly were only dangerous twice, and it was on set pieces, and both times it led to a goal. And now Montreal, in the middle of this playoff race, are looking at a 3-game road trip. Like, that is...
And a final.
Anytime you give up a goal in the 95th minute, it's drop points. So Philly could have gotten, they would have been level with Nashville and second in the East. Yeah. So if you look at that as far as just being able to kind of secure your place near the top or getting more home games in the playoffs, that would have been huge for them.
Do you know what happened, Andrew? Again, Philly makes subs, and they have young kids that they play because they empower them and they trust them. And they're able to be successful.
Look at that.
Well. Top seven in the East, New England, they will win the Eastern Conference. They will have home field advantage. We've kind of said they're going to get the shield as well. 66 points. Nashville, Philly, Orlando would have home games in that first round. Atlanta, D.C., Montreal currently in. Both sides of New York on the outside. Columbus, and then there's Miami. Don't have the E next to their name yet, but it will be soon in the Western Conference.
We have done some Texas jokes and some schedule rundowns. I don't know if we mentioned, I think Atlanta plays Cincinnati, Toronto, and Miami, three of their last five. So something to pay attention to.
Beautiful. Seattle up top in the West. All three top teams lost. Actually, all four top teams lost. So not much movement there at Seattle, KC, Colorado, Portland with home games, and Salt Lake, LA, and Minnesota, LAFC, and Vancouver. Chasen. All right. Let's get the mailbag 412060MLS, extratimeandmlssoccer.com.
Martin from Sweden here, and he says, should the U.S. MNT be looking at Brian White? I know there are a lot of forwards competing for the spot, but surely he's earned a call-up for a friendly at least. He also says he thinks it's unfair that Philly has an endless supply of Aronsons, but that's neither here nor there.
Well, they're about to run out of Aronsons.
You don't know that?
They better hit the world market.
You don't know?
Hit transfer market and search by Aronson. I'm going to do it right now.
Go to the Cherry Hill, New Jersey directory and then search Aronson.
Well, there you go.
I think it's the Sullivans who are coming through the academy now. They switched from Aronsons to Sullivans.
There you go. Yeah. You had to switch over to the Sullivans. What do you think about this Brian White for U.S. national team talk?
Yeah, I don't think that he has earned a national team call-up, but he's certainly been a great story so far this year, and he's showed layers to his game that I don't think anybody kind of appreciated were there when he was with the Red Bulls, because the Red Bulls ask you to play in such a specific way that you're not really doing link play and hold up work and some of the stuff that he's shown in Vancouver. But I don't think he's a national team player. I'll be happy to be wrong. If he scores 30 goals next year, then call him up and I'll eat some crow. But I think he's just a really good MLS forward.
Doyle doesn't respect.
Transfer Market says there are but two Aronsons in the world of professional soccer. So
that's a curveball on its own.
Philly had both. Now they just have one. They got to transfer.
Let me get you Jay Mueller here, who says, what's the deal with Nashville? When they're clicking, they're great. But when they're not, well, you get the picture.
Drew in DC, 0-0. We said it on here. DC didn't have their best attacking players. But draw and Nashville go hand in hand.
Yeah, 15 draws on the year.
Best friends.
Yeah, I mean, they
have more draws than wins and losses combined.
The question kind of provided the answer, right? When their best players are playing really well, then they look great. When they're not playing really well, then they look like this. Like that's just what the answer is.
I think one of the things for Nashville, which is confusing, is they're second in the East, but I think they're on 48 points, and the point per game they're on is roughly like fifth or sixth in a normal year, in a non-COVID year a few years ago. And so I think there's a perception of, are they playing like a second place team versus they're playing sort of where their results have come in. I'll close you guys out on this one. Tom Bargart, friend of the show, says, what kind of guests are each of you at a wedding? Are you a star signing, role player, liability? What are your strengths and weaknesses?
Trying to remember my wedding here, Dave. I don't know what you would have. I don't know if you were a star player. You're a key.
I got a lot of the pictures that instantly come out of me out on the dance floor late at night.
Polaroids. Yeah, those come out. Yeah. Those come out. Let's see. I wouldn't say I'm a star player. I'm trying to play my role. I'm trying to make sure, you try not to get too drunk. Try to make sure that you say the right thing to the happy couple, and maybe, glad hand the parents a little bit and make sure the surrounding family looks at you and says, he's just a good guy. But your number one goal is just not to get too drunk. At this age, at least. At a different age, that would have been the number one goal, probably.
Kalen's number one goal is to get that IG content of, so happy for these people. Oh. 19 posts.
Tom needed to include the documentarian in there, and that would be Kalen. Just a very curated Instagram story. Please save that and put it in a Dropbox for us to enjoy down the line.
Kalen seems offended by this.
I don't use social media anymore.
Nice.
I'm off.
Oh, I like that.
He's out.
Get that. He's out.
All right, that's it for us, everybody. Thanks for tuning in. Big Wednesday night. We'll be here on Thursday to wrap it all up with Charlie Davies. In the meantime, enjoy your week. We'll see you then.